With this wonder, that picture of Venus you showed, it did look like Earth, and I saw blue around her. Is there seas on Venus?
I guess I didn't make that clear. The way they color coded it was to make it look like the Earth in that respect. On the Earth, the oceans are found where the deepest level is, the lowest elevations. The water flows downhill and fills those. And so when they painted it blue there, they were suggesting the greatest depth. And so if it were like an Earth-like body, the water would flow downhill and fill these areas. No water there, of course. There's a small amount of water vapor present in the atmosphere. We can detect that spectroscopically, but the whole thing, the color coding there was just to illustrate depths, heights. And if you look at any kind of map of the world, many times they'll show the same sort of thing. As you have green will be for the lower elevations above sea level, and then as you get to higher mountain, they look kind of like gray, or that white or yellow and sort of color, because it's showing you up above the timber line and such. But again, it was just suggestive. I just showed it there. It's just suggestive of what it might look like if it were an Earth-like planet. But it's false color. This was all determined by radar mapping anyway, because you can't see through the clouds. And so when you do an image like that, you have to use some sort of false color. And that's the one they chose to do. Didn't want to mislead you there.
Is there any idea among creation scientists as to when the cratering events took place that we see in the solar system?
We've been debating that. In fact, that we have a meeting every 4 or 5 years called the International Conference on Creationism. We had that was last month, early August. We had in Pittsburgh. We had a panel discussion one afternoon on this very topic, and I've been writing more and more on this. In fact, I'm preparing a paper. It will be coming out soon on this, and a couple other people have been writing on it. Mike Ord is one who's written on it a bit, and Wayne Spencer. Those are three names of people who've written on it more than anybody. Wayne and Mike actually more than I have. Wayne the most of anybody. We've kind of developed two schools within a recent creation framework. Wayne and Mike are of the opinion that most of the craters happened around the time of the flood. I'm of the opinion that most of the craters in the solar system are probably related to day four creation, assembly of the planets on those days. I don't think God created the moon and the other planets and their satellites ex nihilo on day four. I don't think the language of the day four account in Genesis 1 supports that idea. Instead, he made matter and energy on day one, and then on day four formed these planets. He used the word, the Hebrew word asah, meaning make rather than bara, to create on that day. So I think that most of the craters on the moon and Mars particularly are probably a date from the creation event on day four, with a secondary set of impacts, particularly happened on the moon at the time of the flood.
That's a really interesting idea that maybe God sort of created Venus and Mars to sort of demonstrate the different aspects of the flood like that. And I'm wondering if maybe you think that he would have created some of the other planets for some particular reason to show us a certain thing, or maybe a symbolism.
Yeah, I've given that a lot of thought. Some people think Jupiter serves a purpose to kind of shield the inner solar system from comets. I'm not sure if that's really viable, as though I look at it, but it's a possibility. Venus and Uranus share an interesting trait. They're the two planets that rotate backwards. If you look down on the solar system from above the north pole of the Earth, everything orbits the Sun in a counterclockwise direction, and six of the eight planets rotate that direction. Most of the satellites orbit that direction. The Sun rotates that direction. Everything goes the same way, except for Uranus and Venus, and they rotate backwards. Now, the way that that's normally explained in terms of an evolutionary origin for the solar system, they think that the solar system formed from a large cloud of gas that and some dust that condensed, and most of it fell down to form the sun. The remaining material flattened out to form a disk from which the planets formed, and that's why they're all going the same direction and lying in the same plane. But then you would expect the planets to rotate in the same direction. And that then they explained that as the planets were amalgamating, Venus and Uranus suffered some late impacts. Large bodies came in and hit them off-center to kind of de-spin them and spin them the opposite direction. It would take a large impact to do that. The interesting thing is when you have large impacts, they tend to also alter the orbits. That is, kind of randomize the orbits a bit. And you would expect then, if two planets did have such large late impacts, it would have caused the orbits to be more elliptical. Orbits can be close to being circular, but usually they're elliptical-shaped, kind of stretched-out circles, if you will. And it turns out Venus and Uranus have the most circular orbits of any of the planets, more circular than the Earth's orbit is. So if you look at just the orbits of the planets, didn't look at anything else and ask, oh, which planets there are the least likely to have suffered large late impacts, you would universally say Venus and Uranus. When you look at the rotation rates from a gradualistic evolutionary worldview, you'd say, which ones have late impacts? You'd say, well, Uranus and Venus, when the two don't go together at all. And I just have to toy with the idea that maybe God was, you know, just throwing those two planets out on those fronts as kind of a challenge. You know, can you explain that in a totally material, totally evolutionary, non-theistic way? And I think the answer is no. So I'm kind of tuned in now to look more and more for these kind of things. I don't really know what purpose Mercury or Saturn, other than Saturn being just beautiful, it is, and incredibly. How many people have seen Saturn through a telescope? Is it amazing? I first saw Saturn through a telescope about this time of year in 1969, and it totally blew me away. A little tiny telescope, you know, but you could see the rings very clearly. And I tell people, I've probably looked at Saturn 10,000 times since then, and it never gets old. So, but anyway, that's a good question, and I'm keen to try to answer that question as much as possible, but I haven't really formulated much yet, unfortunately.
I was just wondering, are there any economic benefits from all the research that's being done?
Not directly. that's a question that gets asked quite a bit. You know, what good is astronomy, basically? People don't understand in chemistry or biology, you can make better plants, you can make vaccines, this kind of thing, all sorts of things that have direct economic impact. And astronomy is just a very esoteric sort of science. It's one that's you kind of do just for the sake of doing it and the wonder of it all. And it is, I think, the most fascinating science. People, you know, I think get that, that it's you know, out there and it's beautiful and everything. The only defense I can offer then for astronomy is that, number one, it is the purest science in the sense you're doing it just for the sheer exploration, not necessarily thinking of any engineering or economic benefits. But number two, you can't really separate the sciences because you end up with a number of really interesting unintended consequences. And you know, my nation spent an incredible amount of money in the late 60s in the Apollo program, and people could ask, well, why? In fact, they did ask the question at the time, why are we spending all this money on space when we've got all these problems on the Earth? Well, we'll never solve the problems on the Earth entirely, so you're making an argument against any space exploration. But so it turns out during that time and since then, we had to invent certain technologies. And those technologies ended up having applications in other areas of the world. So you end up with a little spillover, and you would be surprised all the nice little places that these things that they discovered became very applicable. So even though it's not a straight line to get there, I think there are economic benefits from what we do find and how we get there, actually.
I've heard reports that some astronomers have picked areas in the universe where they say this is a birthing area for new stars.
Mm-hmm.
Has any astronomer actually seen a new star being born?
No, you hear about press accounts all the time. In fact, we just had one about 2-3 weeks ago where they found a star is born, a new star, they said. And, of course, I go there and I look at it and I think, no. When most people, when you say a star, we've seen a star being born, I think the impression most people get is that we looked there one day and there was no star, and the next day there was. You know, that's the kind of thing that such a press account suggests. But that really isn't going to happen. First of all, the theory of how stars supposedly form, astronomers that believe in billions of years must have stars forming all the time, because you can calculate the lifetimes of typical stars, such as our sun, and the lifetime of those stars, such as our sun, are usually less than the supposed age of the universe. So unless, if you made all the stars primordial from the very beginning, then many of them, including the sun, would have already ceased to exist. So you have to have stars being born all the time. That's the motivation. And they look out in space, they see clouds of gas in space. These are regions that are denser than average. They're still not very dense. It's incredibly rarefied, much more rarefied than any vacuum we can produce on Earth. But the idea is that somehow the material gets scrunched down and gravity begins to collapse and you form stars. But number one, the process would take a long time. It would take, for a very quick star, it would take hundreds of thousands of years for a star to actually form. So since we've only been looking for a few decades, you're not actually going to see the process take place. Second of all, they think that the star formation would take place down deep inside of a cloud, and it would be kind of shrouded by the outer regions of the cloud. Only later on, when the outer regions are removed, can you see the star, but by that time it's already formed. So on two counts, you really couldn't see stars being formed as most astronomers think they are today. So what they do is they go out looking for various objects that they think are recently formed stars. They're basically taking snapshots of these things and saying, okay, here's a star that has recently formed. We didn't really see it form, but we think if we would have been looking a million years ago, we might have seen the process through all that time. So I really have to kind of say, you know, shake my head when I see these kind of press accounts, because it really isn't telling the announcement, and the headline doesn't really match what the story really is all about.
You say light, the atmosphere of Mars is not good for human life. How do you respond to people who have spotted spaceships coming with green people?
Oh, okay, UFOs, flying saucers, those kind of things. I think the vast majority of sightings can be explained in terms of misidentifications, hoaxes, people who not playing with a full deck, you know, those kind of things. There are a few, this is a very small minority of some reports that are difficult to explain. It doesn't mean that they can't be explained by other means. But I'm not convinced that there's any real evidence that we have been visited by alien astronauts. And I'm not alone in this. Many secular scientists, people who are not creationists, would agree with that assessment too. Very few scientists are really into that whole thing. Again, it captures the attention. You know, we've been visited by aliens is a nice news seller, but it doesn't really. That we haven't been visited by aliens doesn't sell very well. I remember one time about 20 years ago. Picked up the newspaper and it had in big headlines something like 20 dead aliens found in Arizona. And I had to read that headline about four times. And I'm laughing, but it's not funny. You know, when you think aliens and you think dead aliens, I'm thinking of the supposed aliens at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and you heard about the story, you know, from Roswell in 1947. They have them frozen in the bowels of that Air Force Base. But it turns out that was just simply illegal aliens from Mexico that had been smuggled into the country, and they died in the in this trailer in the hot desert sun. But again, I read that alien over and over and over again. I thought, did something happen overnight that I didn't know about? You know, but I just don't see evidence of that sort of thing.
Can you offer any comments about, I've seen the internet and that there's a Jesuit diocese of the Catholic Church. They've been dedicating quite a bit of time. They have an observatory in Italy, and I heard that they've since built an observatory in the U.S. and possibly in conjunction with the U.S. government, and they're looking at certain sectors of space. Like, do you have any comments?
Yeah, the Vatican has had an observatory for a very long time. And they've had a location in Italy for that long time, but they also have an observatory in Arizona. I've not been to that one, but they actually have a presence there. They went to Arizona because it's dark skies and pretty clear weather, better than they can get in Europe. And I've met several Vatican astronomers. The people are kind of surprised. I think most people who work in the Roman Catholic Church would be priests, and many of these are priests, but not every priest runs a parish church. There are many Catholic universities that have professors. Most of those are priests. You've got people with PhDs in various types of things. There are priests, Roman Catholic priests, who have PhDs in theoretical physics. There was even one who was building bombs at Los Alamos back years ago, which is kind of strange. But I've met several Vatican astronomers, and near as I can tell, they do good work. They people are surprised to learn that, but there is a research arm in astronomy run by the Vatican.
But is there something special they're looking at?
No, they're just astronomers who happen to be priests doing work within the Roman Catholic Church. Not new there. You know, Copernicus was a Roman Catholic priest, and he did theoretical astronomy back 500 years ago with the heliocentric model. So it's not new. People are surprised to learn that. I had a colleague at the university who was Roman Catholic, and he found out about the Vatican Observatory and started getting a regular mailing. If you ask, you can get on their mailing list. They'll send information several times a year, and he'd always read it and then drop it in my box. He thought it was interesting, and I guess he thought I didn't know the Vatican had an observatory, but I already knew that. Kind of surprising, isn't it?
What we've learned about Venus and Mars, has it broadened our understanding in relation to planet Earth in any way?
It can. It's helping us to understand the unique status of the Earth. But some people have been inspired by global warming. On all of this, Venus's atmosphere is made up almost entirely of CO2, which is a big thing that the global warming people are very concerned about. In fact, they argue that if we don't change our ways, we'll turn the Earth into Venus. That's one of the arguments made there. But there's a whole area of study in astronomy called comparative planetology, where you learn about planets by comparing them one to another, and we can learn about other planets by comparing them to the Earth, but maybe we can learn some general things about the Earth by comparing them to the other planets as well. So it's kind of nice to put it in context. If that's real practical, I don't know, but at least it makes studying the planets a lot clearer if you can do that kind of comparison.
Thank you.